All right. Bruce Callen, are you there? This is Filter, hey, by the way. I'm Paul, and I'm going to talk over Bruce after I asked him if he was there, because this is the spoils of too much coffee, man.
That's great.
Yeah.
I'm here.
Okay, good. You're here. Thank you for joining us. In the first hour of Filter, we talked to Trent Diamonti about the opioid epidemic, his own personal experience with it, and a little bit about the Matt Clinic and SQIM, which is sort of part of what galvanized Trent to make his voice heard about his own struggles. And I really want to just, again, thank Trent for his sharing there, and also kind of topically bringing us in to our next hour of conversation, which is with Bruce Callen, who is, I like to call him our political correspondent here on Filter. I don't know if he always appreciates the job I gave him with, you know, without him saying whether or not he wanted it, but he's got it anyway. So, thank you, Bruce, for joining us again. And, welcome back.
Well, I'm really glad to be here. I like the political correspondent part. Full disclosure, I am a Democrat, and, I'm an officer in the Democratic Party. And I was in SQIM when Trent was there for that big public meeting. There were probably 700 people there a year ago this August, and saw Trent and Aislinn there. And we were hanging out, listening to all the speeches, and heard a lot about the Matt Clinic, which I would prefer to call the Healing Campus, because it's so much more than a Suboxone clinic. The tribe, the Jamestown Sklallam tribe, under Ron Allen's leadership, is going to be offering wraparound services to go with the medically assisted treatment, MAT, that was so fortunate to get.
Yeah, so not just referring to it as MAT, but the Healing Campus. Because it's because of a more full service approach. And, of course, the interest of the folks like Jody Wilkie, who started Save Our SQIM, SOS, was the MAT portion of it, the fact that it was medically assisted treatment. And the idea, I mean, I guess I would say a journalist, yeah, or an interested party, and watched everyone's opinions about it sort of proliferate on this Save Our SQIM Facebook page. And really the primary one that I saw was that, oh, we believe in treatment for opioid addiction. We just don't feel like it should happen in SQIM.
Well, they're a group with a lot of different people in it, and they all have their own reason for being opposed to it. A lot of them are that kind of NIMBY, not in my backyard thing. Some of them have pretended at different times it's going to be right in the middle of SQIM. Well, it's really out the back door loading dock of Costco, in between Costco and the highway. The tribe bought the land there. It's zoned for a medical clinic, and they're going to put a medical clinic there. There's really nothing to stop that, and they have been pretending, SOS has been pretending for a couple years that there was a way to stop it. And I think that they just keep getting shut down over and over again in court. They were in court again this morning. A hearing officer told them they did not have standing to oppose the decisions the city made.
That sounds familiar.
Now the city government itself is saying some things. I wanted to hit one other point about the clinic itself. This is phase one, is to provide this medically assisted treatment to Clallam County, which, as Trent pointed out, really had a high load of prescription opioids over the last decade, and black tar heroin is a real problem there. So, and now fentanyl, of course, as you guys covered. This is phase one. In phase two, they would go on and add psychiatric beds, which are absolutely lacking on the peninsula. And you're really accurate. This is a regional kind of thing. And SQIM has many medical clinics that serve this region. There are certain specialties that we can't get here that we go to SQIM for, some of us older folks. So it is really the right place, and there's for it. there's no reason, good reason, not to do it. Some of the others say it's partly a backlash against the tribe, and there are those in that movement that you can see the racism and the anti-Native American sentiment being expressed. But it is absolutely a needed, a medical need of our region that they would be served.
Bruce, before you go on, there's a little bit of a technical. We're losing quite a few of your words, actually, in terms of where you're talking. I don't know. Maybe it's a bad connection, or we could just get you to, like, poke your head out the window and let those beautiful rays of cellular communication bleach into your mind and send out.
All right.
Let's see what happens.
I can almost see a mountain view. So.
That's good.
I don't think that makes a difference.
No, it probably doesn't.
Does this help?
It sounds way better to me. So you were saying that there's a whole divergent group that have sort of united to prevent the MAT clinic, the healing campus as a total package, from coming into SQUIM, and they've obviously been issuing legal challenges that have not found any footing, and now is sort of the time where the actual permit is being decided and there's a hearing examiner involved. So this is sort of where the rubber hits.
It is far beyond that. They have a building permit. They've broken ground. Construction is happening. They're trying to, I'm not following it real closely because I just don't really think that they're going to get anywhere anyway. It's going to happen.
Yeah. There's no stopping it at this point.
I don't think so.
But there has been some efforts, at least. Well, and so, you know, what we're going to talk about today is some recent events at the SQUIM City Council that may be or maybe directly related to the MAT issue that we've just been talking about and we're talking a bit about with Trent before. So can you tell us what happened at the SQUIM City Council this week? Help give our listeners an idea and some context, maybe for folks who don't always follow rural city government.
This has been, I will have to back up a little bit before I say what happened. The SQUIM City Council has been through a tough patch over the last several years. There have been a lot of resignations, followed by appointments, followed by elections where there were no challengers. There was an unopposed candidate. And so they have ended up with, I call him the QAnon mayor, is William Armacost. It is a weak mayor system there. So the city council really only has the authority to legislate. They have no authority over day-to-day operation of the city. And he has three recent appointees who have never stood for election. So they went into executive session and came back with a motion to, to instruct the city attorney to negotiate the resignation of the city manager, who does have authority over day-to-day operations of the city. This does not give them any more authority than they already have. They would have to have an interim manager or hire a manager. I don't know who would want to work for them after this, but they have to find a manager to carry forward with day-to-day work. The manager has not resigned. He is still in position. I want to give a shout-out to the two city councilors who did not vote for this, and one of them is Brandon Denise, who is a Republican and stood on principle and opposes this move. I think the move, this is this QAnon majority, QAnon mayor and his majority are basically frustrated that they can't rewrite history and have different zoning laws and different ways of approving building permits, but the thing is that the tribe bought the land. It was zoned for a clinic. They're going to put in a clinic. They would like to kind of work against that, but they don't have a legal basis for it, they want to fight it anyway. And that's really what this is about, I think. They have not given their real reasons in public about why they think that the city manager needs to go. But I'm sure it has to do with the Matt Clinic.
Yeah. I mean, are you still there, Bruce?
Yeah.
They did it in executive session, right? That's when they decided to fire or to ask for the resignation of their city manager. Mm-hmm. But and that doesn't effectively mean that they got rid of him. He has to agree to resign.
They can fire him, but there's a process for that, and they haven't started it yet.
Okay.
He does serve at their will. Majority were all recruited by a couple of political activists, Republican political activists in Clallam County, Donnie Hall and Jim McIntyre. They have been trying to change government there, and I'll read to you what Donnie Hall said on the radio. He thinks that the city is being run by the bureaucracy and what he would call the Squim Valley elite.
Hmm. Interesting.
And they just don't like how the laws are, and they're trying to get the city to stand up against them. So that's kind of where it's at right now. They're in an interesting place.
So a lot of these folks, it doesn't seem like they were really galvanized into a political service until the Matt Clinic became a focal point of Squim.
I think that the opportunity to get some conservatives onto the city council has been in the sights of the Republican Party in Clallam County for a while now, longer than that probably. This is just, I think that this movement has galvanized support among conservatives. But I'd like to point out too, though, that Squim is not, you may have your own ideas about Squim, but it did, Governor Inslee isn't especially popular in Clallam County, but he did win 57% of the vote in the Squim precinct.
Wow.
So I do not think that this, that Donnie Hall or the Republican Party or this majority on the city council represent the values and the compassion and the attitudes of the people of Squim. And there's should I go into the blowback that they're getting?
Yeah, we could, but I just wanted to note that they're instead of the silent majority, they may be the loud minority in this case. Based on those 57% going for Inslee, that's really interesting.
Yes, isn't it? And really it's a case of people not taking enough interest in local government, which is a theme I want to get to in a little while.
Yeah.
It did wake up a whole bunch of people. It was a Zoom call earlier this week with 100 Squim people who are appalled at this, and they are coming out of the woodwork in support of the city manager. They think he's been doing a great job for a long time. They are definitely against this, and they are going. There's an outpouring of support for him in the short term, and they hope to preserve him in office and keep him there as the city manager of the city of Squim going forward. A lot of folks who are in the meeting who are well-known citizens in the Squim area. They are going to be actively looking for candidates also in the next election. So I think it was an actual misstep on the part of the QAnon mayor, and I think that they will probably be able to elect a majority in the next election.
So it may have actually galvanized Democrats or even just Republicans who don't want to be associated with QAnon or independents to actually run for office in Squim, run for city council and replace Armacost, the QAnon mayor, and the folks who have stood by him in this.
Yeah. Armacost is not going to be on the ballot this time. He's in the middle of a 2-year term, is my understanding.
Gotcha. So he can't be replaced.
Other positions, but he, you know, this is a situation like in Port Townsend where the city council has certain authority, and then they appoint a mayor who fulfills basically a ceremonial role and runs meetings and so on, and coordinates the agenda for the council meeting.
We should note that the council, the Sequim Council, didn't unilaterally go for asking for the city manager's resignation. There was a standout, and he was also recruited by McIntyre and the same folks that you were talking about, wasn't he?
Yeah, that was the guy I called out, Brandon Janice.
Yeah. And so it shows that there isn't, you know, as much as it seems like there's sort of this united front there, it also, it may not hold water as it stands going forward.
Well, and this may just be, you know, this is just kind of an indication of the split that's happening right now inside the Republican Party, whatever that is anymore, between some sort of reasonable people who are interested in government and some folks who just have another view and are coming in from far right.
So I want to talk to, you know, I also want to get to talking about how, you know, get the importance of getting active, but I also want to see this in a national context. Last Wednesday, we saw truly, as in everything in the last 4 years, an unprecedented event, which was a storming of the United States Capitol while Congress was in session to certify the Joe Biden as president and Kamala Harris as vice president. And you just kind of, as each day goes on and we learn more news about that attack by violent white supremacist extremist terrorists, I wonder, how do you relate the sort of macrocosm of that event, you know, which is reverberating across the nation, to something like this in Sequim, you know, where we see a small affluent town take action, kind of in a way cutting off their government's head, or at least attempting to. Is it related? Are these events related, or is that, like, you know, maybe looking too much for these connections?
I don't think it's going too far. I think it's Trumpism, and I see it happening also in Grace Harbor. There were two Trump Republicans who were elected to the county commission down there, and they are trying to pull the plug on a syringe exchange program that supplies Narcan to first responders, and they won't listen to any experts. I mean, this is just really typical of this whole Trump movement. I think it is a broader movement, an anti-government, anti-professional, you know, this pretending it's a populism and basically fascism of condemning elites and, creating, destroying confidence in public institutions and in the press. Really what has come down to, you know, like in as we look at what happened in Washington, this whole election outcome denial, they are basing their entire belief system around no facts, and they are listening to the words of one person, and that's really fascism.
And is this fad, or is this going to stay? You know, that's the question I keep wondering.
It's been a long time coming, and it has always been there, and it was enabled and awakened and promoted by Donald J. Trump, and it isn't going to go away right away. It will always be there. And now that they have had this, I think that they're, you know, I'm going to be the first to defend the people who did not go into the White House. I'm sorry, into the Capitol building. They were outside doing a First Amendment thing. That's fine if they want to believe that. That Biden didn't win the election as he clearly did. That's their business. But for Trump to promote that ideal and prevent and incite insurrection and to get these folks to, as you mentioned, enter the Capitol by force, kill a police officer, break through windows and doors, and stop Congress from doing its constitutional duty. That's insurrection, and he incited them to it. It wasn't just the speech. It was, and I think there's a whole lot more that's going to come out about this, about the understaffing and the slow response of the National Guard and what was known by security ahead of time. I think all of those things are going to come out in the, over time, and we'll find out that he was well aware of what was going on, even as he spoke, what was going on. And I've gotten away from your question.
No, this is important to talk about, too. And I mean, I would just add to your list that the allegations, the suspicions and possibilities that there were actually representatives in Congress who were aiding and abetting these terrorists in entering and doing God knows what if they had free rein of it. But I mean, it goes to the core. You know, it's there's rot at the core of it. And I mean, I don't know how much we'll be able to know in the coming weeks, but I mean, it's a monumental, you know, historical moment, that we have yet to scratch the surface of.
I would agree. We're only beginning to find out what really happened, and it will be even more appalling than what we've seen so far. It'll take a long time, and it was. The monumental aspect of this, I don't think it can be overemphasized. I think it's going to be, it's going to be more than a page in the history book.
Yeah. Well, in this context, we're talking about SQUIM. We're talking about these folks who, I mean, were elected. Some, most of them were elected, but then some were appointed, right? So it was kind of a balance of that, but
yeah,
there really wasn't a counterpart to this group, that was organizing folks based on Republican principles and especially pointed towards the galvanization that was happening because of opposition to the Mac Clinic. Are we seeing something happening in the opposite direction now, for Democrats in SQUIM?
Well, let's not just Democrats. This is a nonpartisan situation, and people who do not see themselves as Democrats or even as partisans are quite involved in going forward with this. And they've started a Facebook group that's called the SQUIM Good Governance League. And like I say, there were 100 people there, and they're forming committees, and one of the committees, it will be looking for candidates, because that's what it takes. Elections are the way past these situations. You live with the consequences of elections, and when only one person gets files for office, that person is going to get elected pretty much.
Yeah.
And you don't have, then you can spend 4 years thinking about that.
Mm. Yeah, I certainly did with Trump. Learning how to live with that loss, you know, but also like being involved and remembering to, when we have these moments where we can see, if I had taken a more active stance here, you know, I could have prevented it. I probably couldn't have prevented Trump from entering office, but going forward in terms of, you know, making sure that, my community represents my, you know, the values that me and my peers really believe in, you know, sometimes taking a stand and running for office, or supporting people who are running for office can make a difference. Whether or not you're running as a Republican or a Democrat, because like you say, if you were running for Port Townsend City Council, let's say, you wouldn't be declaring a party. You wouldn't have to give that information over, correct?
That is correct. This is if you like, I could really talk about what's coming up here and what running for office means. Is this a good time to bring this in?
That'd be great. I think all we right. People need to hear about this.
Yeah. This has happened. This is not something. This is something that happened here. I'm remembering the 1980s and the school board election, and there were stealth candidates who had some really far right-wing confused that they were keeping to themselves and they're running for school board because it's kind of low-key. And they were being, there was a national movement to kind of do this, and it was recognized, and some candidates stepped up to keep it from happening. But, it could happen, and it happens when people become less interested in public service. So not everyone is ready to be in office, in the school board, but we have school board. This is an odd-numbered year, so there are no partisan elections. We're not going to be electing people to the county courthouse or to the legislature or anything. We are going to be electing city council, school board, fire district, probably got PUD coming up. There's a board district election coming up in the third district. So here's what you do. You think about whether you want to run or not yourself. And you try to find somebody who you think would be good. And you go up to them and you say, have you ever thought of running for office? A lot of people haven't, but people who would be good at it. I think you'd be good at it. I will help you get elected. These are important things to tell people. Mm. If considering running, then you should start going to the meetings and see what the job is about. Some people run for office because they think they can do something. Like, I'm gonna cap rent in Port Townsend. Well, not really gonna happen. then you might want to talk to someone who is in the job now about what they've been able to do and what their frustrations are. And get a reality check on what the job is. And then you can have some confidential conversations with people who run campaigns. I'm one of those people. You could ask your friends, who do you know who knows something about campaigns? There are some real do's and don'ts about getting a campaign started, and people need help whether they know it or not. And folks who are a little more in the know about campaigns can let you know what's involved and help you connect with people who have experience. So, you can find a treasurer, a manager, somebody who can help you with messaging and that kind of thing. And there's a lot more to it than just buying some signs. So it's something I hope that your audience, which is, perhaps younger than me by Port Townsend standards, a young audience, would start looking around at their friends and thinking about who might be a good person. Candidate recruitment is very important, and this is the time to be doing it. The filing week is in May, the second week of May. Anybody who wants to be on the ballot in November needs to go up to the, probably do it online now, go to the auditor's office and file for office and to be in the election. Mm. So all of this is going to happen. There's going to be a lot of jostling and kind of rumors, and everybody talks to each other before May to see who's going to file and who's going to run for what position.
And can you talk a little bit more about some of the positions that are going to be elections that are going to be happening in 2021? That folks,
they will be on the ballot. There are, we have three or four. Washington has a lot of what we call junior taxing districts, and every one of them has a board of some kind. So most places have a school board, and we have a school board here that has several positions, and two or three of the positions come up every couple of years in an odd year, and those folks set policy for the school district. They hire the superintendent and they work with the superintendent and the principals to see how to keep an eye on things and make sure everything's on the up and up. Same thing happens with fire districts. There's a lot to oversee there. The public utility district also has three positions. I'm not sure it's on the, I think it's on the ballot this time. I'm not positive. The port district definitely is. There are three port commissioners, and they oversee the they have hired a manager to oversee the operations of the port, but they give direction about policy, and they really look into what the port can do to help with economic development in the area, you know, what to do with the property around the airport or what to do about the boat ramps and, you know, the harbor and Quilstein or whatever. That third district, which is that south part of the county here, will be up for election this next time. So those are a few of the things coming up. We also have a cemetery district in some parts of the county. There's a little board of locals who can levy a small tax to help support the cemetery and keep it tidy.
Okay.
There are water districts in a couple of small localities. And in Port Ludlow, there's even a drainage district for one of the neighborhoods down there where they are in charge of making sure that the groundwater goes where it needs to go.
Are there ever situations where, like, nobody files to be on the cemetery board, for instance?
Yes.
And in those cases, yes. What happens? You know, who takes over those roles, or is there just nobody fulfilling the duties as prescribed?
Failure to elect. I haven't read much about it, and so I couldn't give you a good answer. I think they go ahead. They may be able to appoint the people who are on it, may be able to appoint people to the vacancies. I'm not sure. I'm going to just guess there. I'm going to punt.
Yeah, no worries. And we appreciate Bruce punting because he could have been like me and just talked about how he doesn't know the answer for 10 minutes, which I'm famous for. I'm just curious, you know, thinking about what do you think are the most consequential races in Jefferson County in 2021? Obviously, we've been talking a lot about Clallam, but the theme here is really like don't lose sight of your government, and don't think for a second that we couldn't have a situation where folks who are actually embracing conspiracy theories and not reality could be in charge of your government. And basically everything, you know, that you take for granted in terms of, you know, living in this county could be up for grabs. And so in your mind, what are the elections that you see? Say somebody who has an interest in politics, right, but doesn't necessarily know, they want to be involved in governing. They've been doing community service. What kind of position do you think? How does somebody decide what to run for? What methods would you give to somebody who really wanted to be in public service but didn't quite know where to start?
Mm-hmm. I would, you know, you go with your strength and what you're interested in, and you also aim. Yeah, you know, I just talked to a young person the other day who wants to be in the legislature. Well, it's pretty rare to just start out there and just run for that. It's really rare for somebody to just go ahead and run for, even for county commissioner. Usually you do something else first. The school board is a pretty useful place to start. Most people know something about schools, and if you're interested in being involved in it, policy, a lot of folks don't. They run for office because they want to do a certain thing, and that needs to be balanced with the desire to make sure that all things are done well, and that you're taking care of the people's interests in their government in every aspect. Mm. So you're keeping tabs with the staff and the operations, and you're kind of watching, well, the money especially, but you really have a lot of responsibility. So I think that being involved with a school board, you start to see that there are going to be personnel issues, property issues, you know, building projects, all kinds of different budgets and different pockets of money that you use for different things. You can't just say, well, we're getting all this money over here, we'll spend it on that. You learn about how government works and actually works by doing these jobs for the junior taxing districts. And that can prepare you for one of the bigger jobs. The port position is probably the biggest thing on the ballot coming up. It has a really big budget, and it has a really big responsibility. and that is looking out, creating economic development in Jefferson County. The 3rd District has been represented by Pete Hanke. I don't think he plans to run again, and his position, it's an open seat. There's also a difference between running against an incumbent, being a challenger, and running for an open seat. An open seat's easier to win, usually. So it's an opportunity for somebody who has a real interest in the work of the port, it's the airport and the boats and all, the maritime stuff that goes on here and all that property, but it's also meant to do more, and that's the economic development piece of things and creating opportunity for people to create jobs and vitality in our community, economic vitality.
These are just some of the things that are going to be available for folks to declare for, to file for. And so, my hope is that, as having been a candidate at one point for office, I ran for office for a couple reasons. But mostly I think what the best thing about running for office, no matter whether or not you win, which I didn't, but I learned so much and I realized that part of the reason I ran was to learn, because I have always considered myself somebody who learns by doing. In some cases that's advisable, and in some cases not so much. But the things you can learn by running for office and really committing to the idea of being a public servant and trying to understand how all these different systems relate is an education. When you go through the process and really experience it firsthand. So, I just encourage people who have an interest in government and how government works, even if you feel like you don't necessarily know everything or you're not the smartest person in the room, you don't have to be. And actually, in some ways, it's really, I find the electeds that I have the most admiration for are folks who are learning computers and just constantly absorb information. And they do have a basic philosophy that they're working from, but they're open to new inputs. Not conspiracy theories, of course, but new inputs that could change their minds. So I would encourage people, you don't have to be the smartest person in the room. You don't have to know everything there is to know about politics. If you love where you live and you want to be a part of things, obviously you may have a specific policy you want to work on and change, and whether or not that's possible will be something that you learn along the way. But just by doing that and learning these things through the crucible of running for office can be a very, very vital and fulfilling exercise. So, I would hope that people would reach out to Bruce if they have even questions about running. There's no such thing as a stupid question when it comes to this. I would say that's true, right, Bruce?
Yes, it's true. And thank you for that. And that's exactly what I mean. If you're not up to it yourself or up for it, finding another person or getting involved in the middle of a campaign, even taking a statewide, like an initiative measure or something that you're in favor of and campaigning for that, it is a really good way to get your feet wet. And it's not, just being in a campaign is not a long-term commitment the way that serving in office is. So that's another way to get involved.
Well, we thank you for being here today with us, Bruce, and giving us a little background on what's happening in SQIM, and for encouraging us to run for office, because I really hope people think about it and remember that your commitment and your willingness to be a part of this community in public service makes a lot of difference in terms of helping us retain our values as a community.
it really does.
So thanks again, Bruce, and our political correspondent, Bruce Cowan, will be back with us, I'm sure, in the coming months. So thanks again, and don't you go changing.